Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to Unchurched. My name is Rebecca, and I'm your host for the next half an hour or so. Here on Unchurched, what we do every week is we talk about church culture. And those are basically church culture being the ideas, the values, and the thoughts that the things that church values and their beliefs and the actions that surround those. And then we compare it to the Bible. So here, what we've been doing is, this is episode 13, and for the last four episodes, we've been talking about what it means to be a good person, what it means to be a bad person, the origin of sin, and the original sin. And we know that sin is the willful rejection of God's sovereignty and rule over our lives. And that there is a standard of living that God has actually intends for us to live. And what is that standard? So if you go into church and you ask people, hey, so what is the standard that I'm supposed to live by? Like, what does it mean for me to act the way that God wants me to act? Where do I go? How do I find this out? Now, there are people that will probably point you to the Bible and say, read the entire thing, which we wholeheartedly say, yes, read the entire thing here on Unchurched, because it contains everything you need. But that can be a little bit daunting to sift through 66 books. Some people may say, well, it's like Jesus said, all you need to do is just love God and love people. And if you do those two things, then you'll be doing good. So, and you'll be a good person. And, yes, there is a lot to that. So now some people will say, oh, it's the Ten Commandments. And, and in some places, you can still find the Ten Commandments listed in public places. And some churches still have the Ten Commandments up on their wall in various places. But what is the Ten Commandments? And is that God's standard? Well, if we look at what God's standard is for our living and where we find it and what it is that, yeah, we kind of need to go to where the Ten Commandments is, which is happens to be in the Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible. That's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Now, Genesis has the story of Adam and Eve. It has the story of Noah. It has the story of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the story of Joseph, and which are all really good reads, especially the story of Joseph. Now, Joseph, if you're not familiar with it, just to sum up very briefly, is that Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery. He had some dreams about and the reason they did that is because he had some dreams that said he was going to be ruling over them, and they didn't like that because he was their younger brother. And so they decided that they were originally going to kill him, then they sold him into slavery. He ended up in Egypt, became a slave, was wrongly accused, ended up in jail and spent a long time in jail before somebody came to him and said, hey, Pharaoh had a dream and nobody can interpret it. And Joseph had a knack for being able to interpret dreams because he'd had come across two people in prison who had dreams, and he interpreted them and the outcome of that, and it went really well for him and them. And so as a result, he ended up before Pharaoh interpreting the dream, and then Pharaoh's like, well, you seem to know what you're talking about, and he put him in charge of all of Egypt and collecting a bunch of grain, because the dream that Pharaoh had to be was about this huge famine that was going to happen, preceded by several years where it was just going to be this crazy abundance harvest. And Pharaoh's like, Yeah, that's awesome. So you're the guy to do this. So Joseph prepares for this. His brothers come to Egypt because they don't have any grain during the time of famine, but they hear that Egypt has grain. So they go down to Egypt. They find out that there's grain. They don't recognize their brother because they're sure he's dead. And Joseph recognizes them and they're reunited happily. And Joseph's family comes and moves into Egypt. Well, what happens over the next several hundred years is that Joseph's family multiplies quite rapidly and they become a huge group of people who end up becoming the slave class for the Egyptians. And so because they're the slave class there, they are treated extremely poorly. There's genocide happening from the Pharaoh about 500 years later. They're like, there's too many of them. We got to kill them off. And so there's genocide, there's slavery, there's people being beaten on a regular basis. And God's not happy to leave them in that situation. So he raises up this guy by the name of Moses and says, hey, Moses, I want you to go deliver my people. Moses, of course, has this back and forth with God because he doesn't really want to do it. And God convinces him otherwise. And so Moses then goes and does what God says and delivers the people via a series of plagues that hit the Egyptians but don't hit the Israelites, which are God's chosen people. And eventually Pharaoh says, fine, get out of here. I'm tired of all these plagues. There's too much going on. Go ahead and leave. And so the people leave and they have all these, when they leave, there are a ton of miracles that happen before them. The Red Sea is parted before them. They cross on dry land to escape Pharaoh because Pharaoh decides that he is going to kill them. And that is thwarted by the Egyptians ending up it being covered by water in the Red Sea. They don't have any food, but they get food daily from heaven called manna. They also have quail that enters the camp that they're able to just pick up and eat. Cook it and eat it. There's water springs out of a rock for them. On a few occasions, there's a pillar of fire that is near their camp by night and a pillar of smoke by day, so that the presence of God is there and in a physical and tangible presence. So these people are being delivered by God from slavery to a new and promised land, and Moses is walking them over to that promised land. Well, in the midst of all that, they've got all these miracles that are happening before them, and they are extremely rebellious. They start doing things that are not right. Like, they start worshiping other gods. There's a point where Aaron, Moses' brother, makes a golden calf, and they're like worshiping it and dancing it and acting like heathens and doing things that are causing and wrecking havoc in their lives and causing problems for each other. And so as a result of this, God writes down a standard of living for them on two tablets of stone. And these are called the Ten Commandments. And those Ten Commandments are, if you're not familiar, they're found in Exodus 20, 2 through 17, and Deuteronomy 5, 6 through 21. There's Exodus 1, the first one is, you shall have no other gods before me. And he reminds them, he's like, I am the Lord your God, which you have brought out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me, because the other gods didn't deliver them. God did. He says, you shall not. And then number two is you shall not make any graven image or likeness of anything that is in heaven or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. And you shall not bow down yourself to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and unto the third and fourth generations of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. The third commandment is, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that has taken his name in vain. Number four is, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And that's keeping 6 days shall you labor and do work. And then the seventh is the Sabbath for God, because he created everything in 6 days. And then rested on the seventh. On number five is honor your father and your mother so that so you will live long on the earth. Number six is you shall not murder. Number seven, you shall not commit adultery. Number eight, you shall not steal. Number nine, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And number 10 is you shall not cover your neighbor's stuff. And so those are the Ten Commandments. These are the quintessential Ten Commandments that God gives to Moses and says, hey, my people need to live by these 10 things, that these 10 commandments are what needs to happen. So that is pretty much the law and what the beginning of the law starts off with in Deuteronomy. It starts off in Exodus and then moves on to Deuteronomy and then Leviticus and Numbers. And what happens is that it's not just these Ten Commandments, because those are for the basics of day-to-day living. There's also within the law, that's the Mosaic law. And then within the Levitical law, which is Leviticus, it talks about the rules for sacrifices and things like dealing with mold in houses and eating practices and how to live life. It also talks about sacrifices. And it was not just to show what sin was and the standard for God's for how God wants his people to live. It is also to prepare people for the idea and the concept of atonement for sin. Because within the law, there's provision for a forgiveness of sin, which is a temporary forgiveness. Because what happened is that there would be these four different kinds of sins and whatnot, is that you could present a sacrifice, and that the priest would take your sacrifice and present it on the altar before God in the temple. And this is really long and it's really fascinating, and not something that I'm going to sum up in the next like 10 minutes, because we're just talking about God's standard. But to sum up is that the sacrifices had to be perfect. They had to be without blemish. There was no error. They had to be perfect specimens of whatever they were presenting. So if it was a bull, it had to be perfect bull. If it was a lamb, it had to be a perfect lamb. If it was a dove, it had to be perfect. So like nothing wrong with it, nothing missing with it, that it had no blemish, nothing wrong with it at all. And if they couldn't afford that, or they didn't have that, then they had to bring the best grain that they had with the best oil, like mixed with frankincense. And then they had to bake it in an oven without any leavening in it. So no yeast, because yeast is often used in terms of sin in the Bible. And so also what yeast does is it ferments and it changes the character of and it introduces imperfections. And while yeast bread is quite tasty, It's also not something that it's not meant to be a part of the sacrifice. Is that sin is not a part of the sacrifice? Is that that's what it was? So, what was the purpose of all of this? There's like sacrifices. There's like standards for living, and like there's basically all these like do this, don't do that, don't do this, do this, and that was like basically all this stuff, all these rules for living. So what is the purpose of that? Because that wasn't something that was given to Noah, and it wasn't something that was given to Abraham, but a promise was given to Abraham. So while we're not going to talk about that just yet, but it's like, what was the purpose of the law for these rebellious people who God had chosen? And if we go to Romans chapter 3, we find out that in Romans chapter 3, let me flip back to it. Now, if you're hearing a squeaky in the background, that's the dog playing with a squeaky toy. And it's better that she does that instead of running off with a microphone in her mouth. So in chapter 3 of Romans, it says, that now we know that what things soever the law says, it says to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law shall no flesh be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin. So basically what the law did is it showed people that they're not perfect, that it's nigh impossible to live according to the law. Like, it really is impossible to live this way. That through the law, we are revealed what sin is. That these Ten Commandments, that loving God becomes impossible when we start looking and examining ourselves through the Ten Commandments. Also in chapter 7 of Romans, and we're going to skip down to verse 12, it says, "Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy, and just and good." And what it says is, "When then with that which is good made death unto me, God forbid, but sin, that it might appear sin, works death in me by that which is good, that sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do allow not, for what I would that I do, that do I not. But what I hate, that I do." So basically, it's like the things that I, you know, when we're shown what sin is that we realize that the things that I am doing, I don't measure up. And I'm finding that, you know, I find that I am falling short. Now, there are people who are convinced that they can live according to the law and be justified by it. And what I mean by justified is that by acting out and doing those Ten Commandments, that they can prove that they're good enough for God. But if you remember a few weeks ago when we were talking about what a good person is, and in 9 and 10, and bad people, is that Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, in the Beatitudes, that's Matthew's chapter 5, 6, and 7, is that he basically broke down the Ten Commandments, and he said that even thinking about adultery, you don't have to do it, just thinking about adultery, or having hate in your heart towards another person, is the same as if you'd already done it. Is the same as if you've murdered that person. Is the same as if you'd had if you'd had relations with that person as in terms of adultery. And if you look at what somebody else has and go, man, I need that in my life. I need to have that. Instead of being content with what God has given you, is that saying I like lusting after another person's belongings, another person's wife, another person's things, that those things, that it's the same as if you've actually done it, which is really interesting because now that I think about it, it's like just lusting after something is just a complete heart issue. You don't even have to say it out loud. It is something that happens in your heart. That the 10th commandment is a complete heart issue. Like sit there and stare at what your neighbor has and go, yeah, I want that. I really want that. I need that. I have to have that. Instead of being content with what you have in your life. Now, to the point of where it's like you look at what somebody else has and instead of asking, well, is this what God wants for me? We model ourselves after other people and other things. Where we need to actually just look at what God has for us and be content with what God has for us. So the whole purpose of the law is to show that that it's sin dwelling in us rather than having being accepting that it's the willful rejection of God's sovereignty and rule over our lives rather than being content with what God has for us and where God wants us to be. That's the purpose of the law, is that this is what was going on with, this is why the Mosaic law was important and why the Levitical law was important for the Israelites there in the wilderness, because they were, God had just delivered them from captivity, from slavery, and from all these horrible things. And he's giving them a new land. He's giving them a place to be and to be their own people and for him to rule over them. And he's got this whole plan for them. And they're in the midst of it. They begin to willfully reject the sovereignty of God and the direction for their lives, which was a land of milk and honey, which was Canaan, which is now in the area of where Israel is, that he was to be their only God, and that they were going to live lives that were not like those of the people in the nations around them, because they were enslaving people, they were doing child sacrifices, they were murdering other people, they were stealing each other's lands, they were abusing each other, and God wanted to show the world that that's not how he created them, and he chose the people that he chose Abraham and Abraham's seed as the people who would show that God had a specific purpose for us to and a way for us to live that is not like all the that is not detrimental and it's not going to kill us off in a few years. And so that's the purpose of the law is to reveal sin, is to reveal that there is a way that just causes people to die and to die quickly. And that's by not following the law. It's also to show that sin inhabits us directly, that we are inherently sinful, that even that if you're not aware of the law, you can just be like, oh, well, I'm a good person and all that. But once you become aware of the law and realize how certain behaviors like committing adultery with another man's wife or another woman's husband, how those sorts of things, that affects the other people horribly and destroys lives and causes confusion with children and breaks hearts and causes, you know, a lot of disappointment, that by following a false god, that there's no promises that are delivered, that it's basically you're leaving your life up to chance, and that also that that by following and going against the principles and doing what the other tribal people and the other nations that were doing in that time is not beneficial, and that there's no relief from that, and that when you live in such a way that is covetous and where you're playing keeping up with the Joneses and where you're trying to obtain and stealing what your neighbor has and doing these other things, that nobody gets ahead, that everybody suffers because of it, and that people end up living in a society that is broken, that is hurting, and where you have where you end up with castes of people, and no one is where there's only a few people who are who live as czars and princes and kings and pharaohs, and the majority of the people live as people as slaves and as serfs and as workers. Obtaining just a little bit of what to serve the people who have a lot. And that's not what God intended for his people. That's not what God intended for any human being to live their life. And I highly recommend sitting down and really examining the law, not just reading like one or two things out of it. Because when you start to read it, like somebody, it can be a little bit daunting. There's a lot to it. There's a lot that doesn't make sense initially when you start going into it. But if you look at some of the things hand in hand with like with some scientific fact and basis behind it, like for example, not eating shrimp or mollusks. Or things that along that nature, that you find out that if you eat those things that and you don't have knowledge of when to eat a mollusk or a clam or one of those little, like, you know, shellfish, is that you can end up getting really sick. And like there's red tides and those things can poison, like they're fine for the shellfish, but if you eat stuff that's in a red tide, you can poison yourself and die and cause yourself a whole lot of problems. And so there's, so with knowing that, having that information, which these people did not have at that time, nobody had that information at that time, it makes the law like an incredibly fascinating and great document for living in such a way where it avoids trichinosis, parasites, disease. And I mean, there's no document that has so much scientific basis to support clean eating and avoiding things that you shouldn't be, like, to avoid disease. And to avoid really painful deaths because of disease and worms and parasites, than the law. Because if you follow the laws, the diet laws that are within the Leviticus and Deuteronomy and all that, you're not ever going to get sick or food poisoning, ever, really. I mean, like, the last thing that you want to do is cook food in a milk product because it'll go sour really fast and get you really sick. I mean, everybody knows what happens when you put a cream-based soup out for too long and you don't have any refrigeration. You get sick really easily off of that. It turns bad fast. So, I mean, that's just the scratching the surface of it and the nail of it. There's a lot of other things that you'd be like, oh, well, that doesn't make sense. But if you search and if you want to know the truth for why each of these are and why it's a good idea not to do some behaviors and activities that are listed in the Bible, you can find out and go, oh, my goodness, I had no idea. And some of them I don't even want to suggest, but there are reasons for not having particular activities of an adult nature because of things that can happen that are not only incredibly painful, but if you did not have the medical knowledge of how to deal with it, you can die from it. So there is that as well, which is like incredible wisdom for certain things. So, and I know there's some people out there that are like, I have no idea what you're talking about, or I think I know what you're talking about. If you don't want to know, do not don't look it up. But know that there are things out there that the law supports, and that it is good and it is holy and it is a good way of learning how to live and living cleanly. So that's all for this week. Now, there are next week, I think we're going to be heading into a little bit more of that, of kind of along these lines. And I believe the next week after that, we're going to be talking to a gal who is a professor at USC. No, she's not a professor. She's a professor. She's a PhD candidate at USC in philosophy. And I had a wonderful opportunity to chat with her about cancel culture and the philosophical stuff behind that. So that'll be a fun and exciting conversation. And then also I'm going to try and get a couple of people from Not the Bee to chat with me about another topic, because the official unofficial Not the Bee podcast. And it's anti-cage Calvinist in Israel that do their podcast. And I will be talking to them and hopefully get them on this podcast as well. So be listening for that. I highly recommend reading the Torah, reading the law, and getting into it, and read alongside of that, read Romans and Hebrews. And it'll be a long study for a lot of people, and it's not something that you'll sit down and just read once, but like go back over again and again and again. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, you can email me at talktome@unchurched.net, and you can complain. I'm fine with that. You can, if you want to talk about certain topics, or if you want to be a guest on this program, I am open to that and I'd love to have you. So let's chat and we'll continue on. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.